Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Mike Patton is with us. Mike has done some amazing work in building new modules to extend the life of some of the best transmitters ever made. He's going to tell us all about oscillators and amplifier and PDM modules that are available from him right now to really save your investment in that expensive transmitter. It's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host here in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a dreary November day here in Nashville with lots of clouds overhead, but kind of nice temperatures. I actually had lunch outside on the veranda a little while ago. And Chris Tarr is here with a lunch and weather forecast for Mukwonago. Chris, welcome in. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Weather, actually, we had record high today. Almost 80 degrees today, and then it's going to be like 34 on Saturday. So there you go. It's coming.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Sunday, we're outside of the heat island of Nashville, going to be down to 18 degrees in some of the outlying towns.
How do you say that down there?
Doggy. Doggy. Wee doggy. That was the Beverly Hillbillies guy. What was his name?
Oh, I don't know. I remember the show. I don't remember the guy's name. I'm a kid. Come on.
Wee doggy. Okay. Well, let's speak to another kid. He's here because he has all the excitement of a kid. Mike Patton is our guest today. Mike, welcome into the show. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, sir. And it's Buddy Ebsen playing Jed Clampett.
That's Mario. We knew he'd know it. Yeah.
Wee doggies. Oh, man.
Max Baer played the stupid son, our son-in-law. Yep. He's still alive, believe it or not. He's like 100 years old.
Wow. Yep. My goodness.
Jethro.
Mike, you're coming to us from Louisiana. What city are you in, sir?
I live in the capital of Louisiana, the proud city of Baton Rouge.
Ah, by the red baton, right?
Red stick. That's right.
Red stick. Red stick. Yeah, there you go.
And there's an old local legend for the origin of the town. Supposedly there was a red cypress tree that marked the boundary between two Indian tribes or clans on the banks of the Mississippi. And so the French were the first ones here, and they called it Red Stick in French, which is Baton Rouge.
That sounds a lot classier than, you know, like some town in East Kentucky called Red Stick. Paint Lick, Kentucky. There's Salt Lick, Kentucky.
There's Blue Lick, Kentucky.
Oh, in Mississippi, there's a town called Soso, Mississippi.
Oh, and my goodness.
They have a high school. Imagine being the valedictorian of Soso High.
Hey, we've got Spread Eagle, Wisconsin.
My God.
And Intercourse, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Let's, yeah. All right. Chris, when did you lose control of the show?
the minute Mike came on the camera, I think is when it happened.
I think so.
Which is pretty common. I mean, that's the, you know, that's what you get when you invite Mike to a party.
I'm here all week. Don't forget to tip your waiter. Well,
the good news is, and Chris and I really haven't got to talk about this yet, but I'll say it in a few words and Mike will tell you in a lot more words. Mike being the consummate contract engineer who fixes lots of stuff. And he's got a staff of engineers that he works with, go out and fix lots of people's transmitters, keep radio stations going. And Mike and his staff started noticing some of the same defects or weaknesses in a number of really pretty popular transmitters. And so Mike starts thinking, you know, I think I could design this a bit better now, maybe with more modern parts, maybe parts that weren't available to the manufacturer when they designed this thing 25 years ago or more. And so we're going to be talking about retrofitting transmitters, and I mean some popular transmitters, not things that are, you know, 100 years old or 80 years old or even 50 years old, but some that are, you know, less than 20 years old, that Mike and his staff have figured out how to build a little bit better mousetrap. So, Mike, did I do okay setting that up? You're going to take us through some of these things?
You did fine. Thank you very much. A great introduction.
Good. All right. So right now, Chris and I are going to talk about Nautel and some of the things that Nautel is offering. They haven't restarted their Transmission Talk Tuesday yet, but they will, and you'll hear about it first because we're on Thursday, and they do the show. They do their thing on Tuesday. But they do have this new line of FM transmitters. It's the VX series, and what makes this line of transmitters pretty cool is that Nautel, have taken what they learned for years over building previous smaller transmitters up to, you know, 5-6 kilowatts or so, and made them much more serviceable. They realized that a lot of these transmitters and their FM transmitters are in hard to get at locations. Hey, I've got one of these transmitter sites at a mountaintop in Hawaii that you can only get to by helicopter. I mean, practically speaking, only get there by helicopter. And so it's nice to be able to point to a transmitter here that is easily serviceable in the field. You can actually change the PA palette with no soldering. Now, we know hardware breaks. I mean, that's just a given. Hardware is going to break at some point, no matter how well it's designed. And the VX series is easy to service. Look at that. The power supply just slides right out on a drawer there. And you know, the power supply and the PA, you know, I think for most of us, are probably two of the most common things to have failures when something really goes bad. Lightning strikes, power surges, overheating in the building, perhaps, if the air conditioning fails and you don't get the transmitter turned off. And so Nautel really addressed this when they designed this VX series. Two of the models are type certified for low power FM, LPFM. That's the 150 watt and the 300 watt model. You can use it as an exciter for a larger transmitter. And in fact, Mike Patton might even have some things to say about that in some of his experience. Anywhere from 150 watts up to 6 kilowatts. Actually, it'll do 6,300 watts. So there's quite a few items in the range here between those two power levels, as you can see on screen. And Nautel's done a great job of designing these things. Chris, you've got a number of Nautel transmitters, if I'm not mistaken, out in the field. Have you gotten to try the VX yet?
I have not, although I was actually just talking to Jeff not too long ago, because first of all, they're not shipping quite yet. I think they're still in the beta phase. So Jeff is actually demoing one at his house right now. So I've been following that. But I'm talking to him because about the time that these are to be released, I've got a new station going on. So who knows? There might be something there.
Good deal. Well, you can find out more about them at Nautel.com. And if you want to check in on their webinars page where they have the sign up for the Transmission Talk Tuesday, you can always go to Nautel.com/webinars. Thanks, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And remember, you'll hear it here first when they start their Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable discussions. Mike Patton, I'm wondering, have you ever been a guest on their roundtable discussion?
I have not.
Oh,
I hope I remember.
Okay. Well, they're missing out. Yeah, you should. I mean, they've had me on. I mean, my goodness, if they, you know, they're digging at the bottom of the barrel for getting me on there. So
they should. Oh, you're fairly well known, you know.
Well, yeah, but what do I know about transmitters? Yeah, I've fixed a few, but oh well. Hey, let's move into what we're talking about here, and that is retrofitting transmitters. So, Mike, probably a good way to start this story is, you know, what's the first time that you did this? What's the first time? What was the first event that brought up the idea of, hey, maybe I can design something better than what's in here and bring this device back to life?
Well, I've been doing this a long time. And one thing I developed an appreciation of early on was that design engineers are a different breed from people in the field as a rule. A good design engineer knows a lot. However, design engineers are not God. And occasionally, even a well-designed piece of equipment ends up with something that's turns out to be a bit of a turkey. And over the years, there were transmitters that I dealt with a fair amount of the time that had obvious design flaws. And I started looking at ways to address them without modifying it to the point where the next guy behind me would just come in and rip it out, which has always been an issue of mine, is if I'm going to make a change to a transmitter, A, I want to make sure it actually makes it better, and B, I want to document the hell out of it so the next guy doesn't come in and say, I don't understand this, I'm going to wire it back the way it was, and then call me an SOB for having, you know, made changes. Some people don't think that you should ever change anything in a transmitter. And of course, for a long time, there were issues with pipe acceptance, which have largely been put by the wayside. Unless you're modifying something that affects the frequency stability of the transmitter, the FCC doesn't really have much to say to that anymore. But the thing that really started us down this path was dealing with the SX series transmitters from Harris. That's a very popular model. There are hundreds of them still out in the field. They were first built in the early 80s, and I put one in back in 1984. And it's a very good transmitter. It's a very solid transmitter. It's very complicated. It was by far the most complex AM transmitter ever put on the market when it was first brought to market. And a lot of people didn't understand it and didn't like it because it was new technology. It had a microcomputer that ran it. And a lot of people made fun about, you know, putting a microcomputer tied to a 200-foot lightning rod, which is kind of funny because the computer in that transmitter is probably the most reliable thing in it.
Oh, my, really? Wow.
No, seriously. Yeah. It's well protected. But the weak point, the main weak point in that transmitter was the fact that it had an A to D converter and a lot of the ability to look at various digital internal parameters on a little digital display on the front of the transmitter with a keypad. Mm-hmm. But it was a primitive display because it was designed in probably the late 70s, early 80s. It had basically what were 7-segment displays, and you had to know the channel number of each of the readings that you wanted to call up. You could call up like 50 or 60 different readings, but you had to have a chart, and it was very cumbersome. The overloads were binary weighted. So if you had some funny number, you had to sit there and subtract each overload out to figure out what they all were. That was very cumbersome.
Oh my and gosh.
If that wasn't bad enough, the display they chose to use was made by TI, and it turned out to be a bad design and was very unreliable. And TI very quickly walked away from it. And so the displays became unobtainium. And the final nail in that coffin was that TI used a lot of those displays in medical equipment. And medical equipment has to have the exact replacement part or it loses its certification.
Oh.
So those are displays that are out there, you know, a stash here and there, are fantastically expensive. I've seen them go for over $200 a digit.
Wow.
And there are 14 digits in that display. So they would lose a segment here, they lose a display there, and pretty soon half the transmitters we were seeing, the readings were totally meaningless. You had to guess what channel you were trying to read, and even further guess what the reading was if you could make it work at all. So I said, you know, there has to be a better way to do this. And I thought about it for a very long time, and I made a bunch of fits and starts, and what we finally ended up doing was we looked around and found an LCD color display that would fit, and we bought one. It's made by a firm in Australia. And then I sat down with an Arduino, took an off-the-shelf Arduino kit, and I figured out how to have it listen to the data bus that talked to the old display, and I wrote the code for it with my longtime friend and employee, Lynn Dortch, who lives not far from you, in fact, Kirk, outside of Nashville. And he and I spent basically 6 months with the brains of a SX transmitter wired up on the bench in front of us, writing code and figuring out all the ways we screwed it up. But when we were done, we had a product, and the first batch ran with the off-the-shelf Arduino board, and we made a PC board that it lived on top of, and then the display talked to that. But then subsequently, we actually bit the bullet and designed a 4-layer board, the first one I ever dealt with. And we soldered the little 99-pin Arduino chip onto it. And then there's the display. It's kind of a sandwich. We had smoked glass plates made at the order and then holes drilled. And the display mounts to the plate. and the little sandwich of the board goes in the back. The old keyboard wires to one end. The ribbon connector from the transmitter wires to the other end. You take the old one out. You plug this one in, and voila, you have a working color LCD display that tells you the units of measure, the suggested or normal reading, and when the overload hits, it tells you in plain text what the overload is, so you never have to look up another code. And we've been very pleased with these displays. We've sold over 100 of them, and they are our most popular product. They are great little displays. We're very happy with it.
That is amazing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it was fun. It's like, I can't believe they pay me to do this. But, you know, and a lot of people, they're very, that really put us on the map. You know, a lot of people talk about these displays. A lot of people very fond of these displays. And then that led us to, well, what else can we do for this transmitter to make it better? And Gates Air has gotten to the point where they pretty well wash their hands on parts and tech support for these transmitters past a certain point. So we developed a good relationship with the folks there, and I have nothing but good things to say about the folks in the tech support department at Gates Air. Walter and the now recently retired Ralph and the other folks there, the guys in Craig in the repair shop, they've been very supportive of our efforts to maintain their legacy gear. So hats off to them for that.
Mike, we're going to put a pause in that real quick and talk about this for just a second, then take our first real commercial break. What year did you come out with that product for the SX transmitter?
That was probably 2014, 2015, something like that.
Okay.
For the first one.
Okay. Okay. Cause I was replacing those displays back in 1992, 93. And just like you said, the real McCoys were expensive. I don't know where I bought them, but I found replacements for cheap. And of course, I would sell them to the radio station at the TI price. So that was a nice little extra income stream there because I worked hard to find a source. But what you've done is just brilliant. Chris Tarr, do you take care of any of those Harris SX transmitters?
Not anymore, but I did when I first met Mike. Geez, Mike, it's probably been 15 years ago now. I did have one there, and he kind of ran me through it and helped me fix a lot of those repairs. I'll tell you, there probably isn't a person on the face of the earth that knows more about these transmitters than Mike.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree. Hey,
I just got back from Alaska. I rebuilt one last week in Alaska.
Oh my goodness! Wow. Because they were pretty efficient. I mean, they make good audio. We're going to take a quick break and be back with Mike Patton. Mike's our guest, and that's just the first of several things we're going to see that makes your transmitters better, that things that Mike and his team have developed that's helping broadcast engineers and, you know, people who buy transmitters, station owners, to get the most out of their investment, if it's an investment that is worth, you know, continuing with. So we're going to hear from our friends at Broadcast Bionics, and we'll be right back with Chris Tarr and Mike Patton.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
These folks at Broadcast Bionics make some really cool stuff, and it all makes your programming better without changing your workflow. That's the whole idea, is that you keep doing what you're doing, but now you get more social interaction and get better content all the way around. That's what Bionics is all about. And hey, Dan McQuillan from Broadcast Bionics is going to be our guest. I'm not sure when, coming up the next few weeks, he'll be talking about virtualizing some of the infrastructure that you have at your broadcast facility. It's really going to be the next thing. They've been on top of it and continue to be at Broadcast Bionics. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack. We're here at This Week in Radio Tech number 618. I'm here with Chris Tarr, my co-host. He's in Mukwonago, Wisconsin. And then Mike Patton is here from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We're talking to Mike about the cool ways that he has come up with to extend the life of most of your transmitters, typically, and get more of your value out of them. Mike, you told us about this. You solved a problem that I knew existed, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s when I started having that and didn't know any solution other than buy more displays. But that was really brilliant what you did.
Thank you. We were very proud of it.
Have you done anything else brilliant?
Well, I don't know about that. But I have done one or two things. The next thing that we developed for the SX series transmitters was the PDM amps in that transmitter use a system that has a pull-up board, a little piggyback board that lives on top of the PDM amp. Here is a PDM amp. Turn the camera here. And this is the actual, just the piggyback part of it on here. Okay. They take a lot of abuse. The diodes get hot, they burn up, they fail. And it's like, this is simple. It's just a few inches. It's kind of complex shape, but I can make one of these. So I sat down with my excellent a PC board design software and a caliper, very expensive caliper. And I measured all the angles and I measured all the distances and I sent it off to the shop and it came back. And here was our second product, was a replacement pull-up board, which fit the existing PDM amps. So that worked well. And then from there, we kind of branched out that we developed a replacement oscillator board because the original oscillator board in that transmitter had some problems with power supply design. And we could talk about the details of that, but unless you're a design engineer, it doesn't really matter. It wasn't a good design. Part of it was it just wasn't a good design, and part of it was a cheap design, and part of it was the state of the art at the time, and we've learned a whole lot more, and we have a whole lot better devices. For example, the original power supply regulator for the PA stage used a linear LM317 K, the metal case, the TO3 case. Not only is that case no longer available, the last time I found one, you could buy one for $60. It's a 50-cent regulator. But it was terribly inefficient. It generated a lot of heat because it ran from a 30-volt unregulated supply. Well, we are using a tiny little device made by Texas Instruments, and it's an amp and a half regulator switching that's on a little PC board that drops into the big one, and we pay about $10 a piece for it, but it carries a higher load than the old 317 and works just great. As long as TI doesn't pull the rug out from under us, and we bought 100 of them, that's another issue is lifetime buys for parts before they go away. So we made a replacement oscillator board. And then we thought, you know, it's the same form factor for the Gate series and the SX series. Ah, and my trusty assistant, Mr. Tuck here, has brought me one of those little regulators by itself, little tiny guy.
Really cool. Mm-hmm.
So we sat down and we redesigned our oscillator board to fit both the Gates and the Harris and the SX series transmitters. They have different sets of connectors. So we just put two sets of connectors on here with a jumper, and they mount the same. They run from the same power supplies. They put the same output out, and you just plug whatever set of connectors in for your transmitter and move one jumper, and you're good to go. So that was a good product, and we've sold, I don't know, 20 or 30 of those, something like that. And then it just kind of went from there that International Crystal in Oklahoma City, sadly, decided to call it a day. Their owner was older and wanted to retire, and he couldn't find anybody to buy it. He said the first time he had to borrow money to pay his payroll, he was done. And that day occurred, and he walked away. So cut-to-order crystals, cut-to-frequency crystals, became essentially unobtainium.
Wow.
And we played around with that for a long time, and we have designed a little tiny synthesizer board with a rotary thumb wheel switches on it that'll generate any frequency from about 100 kilohertz to 5 megahertz. It'll run from any unregulated supply from about 6 volts up to 35 volts. It's a 50-ohm output into 5 volts. 5 volts peak to peak into 50 ohms. And it also will drop onto our oscillator board. So, you know, if you have a crystal, you plug it in. If you don't, put one of our little synthesizers in it. And either way, you make the frequency you want. And it's literally the size of a business card. Here is the oscillator. Here is a business card.
Wow.
Right? So, you know, it's bigger than a crystal. But it works well. And if you need it on a different frequency, and you've changed it to a different frequency. So we've sold, I don't know, 15, 20 of these. We get calls for these all the time.
Mike, Mike, you had told me verbally about that oscillator board, but I've never seen one until right now. And the board that it goes, the bigger oscillator board that it goes on, that is just brilliant. Oh man, well, I got to hand it to you. That's just amazing. And especially thanks for the story about International Crystal Manufacturers. I had bought several crystals from them over the years, as I know you have too. And sad to see them go away, but you know, we have solutions now that can replace that.
Yes, we do. They were good people. I knew them well. My son got his undergraduate degree from OU, so he and I actually got in a tour of the place. It was fascinating to see what they did. I was very, very sad when I had learned that they'd gone away.
Is it anything like New York Jewelry Diamond Cutters? Is it anything like that at all?
Well, it's you know, it was kind of a whirlwind tour, but it was fascinating to see how they actually shaved down the crystals and they aged them and they had little chambers to seal them up. And it was, you know, it's truly a cottage industry. There probably weren't half a dozen people in the United States that made that in any fashion. Especially cut to frequency, you know, that was the key. And that's what made them the go-to people for everything.
Chris Tarr is one of these new age guys that shaves crystals and does incantations to fix the transmitters, aren't you, Chris?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Except it's bath crystals and I snort them. But that's all I've
been doing. Oh, no. Oh, gosh.
Well, buoyed by our success, we decided we would we would bite off something bigger. We redesigned, well, actually, we basically just copied the original PA board out of the Gate series and SX series. It's the same board. And this was a bigger undertaking because not only is this a much larger board, as you can see, it's mechanically very complicated. It has this heat sink on it that we had to have made by a local machine shop. And bent and punched and machined, and then all the little the tolerances have to be exact. I spent hours and hours measuring and measuring and measuring and being absolutely sure that everything was right, all the distances was right, because they had to line up with the piggyback board behind it. They had to bolt onto the heatsink. It was quite a deal, but we were very proud of it. And they use modern FETs, standard little plastic case FETs that you can buy all day long for $4 a piece, as opposed to the original metal case FETs, which are now unobtainium at any price. All the ones that are out there are fakes. And believe me, we've bought from dozens of suppliers. We buy about half a dozen. We say, oh, here's a promising type. Bring them in, cut the top off of one of them, open it up. And the inside, the little tiny die that is the transistor itself, that's about the size of a chiclet, is about a quarter of the size of a chiclet because it's a fake. It'll work. It'll read okay on a tester, but you put it on the load, it goes home. And we've looked and looked and looked and looked, and you just can't get good IRF350s anymore. They are, every one of them in the world is gone. They're gone.
That was the number, the IRF350. Tell me, Mike, help me remember. I remember taking a Simpson voltmeter and doing continuity checks, moving the, yes. You know, having a pattern to check these things to see what was shorted. What was I doing that I remember doing literally 30 years ago?
MOSFETs, by their design, the gate of the MOSFET is such a high impedance. And it's about a 2,000 or 3,000 puff capacitor. It will literally hold a charge for minutes. Okay. So what you're doing is, if a standard like a Fluke voltmeter will put out about 2 or 3 volts open circuit. Okay. So if you take the FET and you put the negative lead on the source and you put the positive lead on the gate, you will see infinite unless the FET's dead. Okay. But you have now charged the gate. So if you then leave the negative terminal on the case, which is the source, and you put the positive terminal of the meter on the drain, which is obviously the third terminal, the transistor will show shorted. It will show 0.0 ohm. If you take your finger and touch the gate, your finger will drain the charge off the capacitor, and the FET will go open. And so that's the trick. If you reverse negative and positive, you will see the back diode built into the FET. So in 30 seconds, you could test the back diode. You can make sure the main channel isn't shorted, and you get what's called FET action. You bias the gate on, you see it as 0 volts as a short, you drain the gate off with your finger, and it goes open. And that's a good FET. You can take it to the bank. That FET is good.
Mike Patton, I want to give you a sincere comment. You are better than Mr. Wizard at explaining these things. That is terrific. And now here's the question. How many can I discharge with my finger before I'm full up of charges and can't discharge any more?
I don't think that's an issue.
Okay.
But yes, it you might have a little more trouble down in somewhere where it's the humidity is very low, but down here in the swamp, it's never been an issue for me.
Chris, I think you remember measuring these transistors that way, right? With the probes and...
I do. And actually, I think it was Mike who taught me that, because when I met Mike was when I had my first SX series transmitter, and it, you know, it had problems like a lot of them do. So I think that's actually where I learned that technique, and it served me well for a few years until I retired that transmitter.
That was at 1250 in Milwaukee, as I recall.
That's correct. Mike and I spent a summer, he was a really good mentor to me as we rebuilt a directional array, and that transmitter was part of that array. And so it was one of many things I learned on his trip up here. So
in fact, I think I'm going back to that station in the next couple of months and doing battle with that array again.
Yep. I believe you are. It was, from what I hear, it's having some issues. So it needs the Mike Patton touch.
Well, we can make it sing.
Mike, I wonder if you might, the board that you showed us, that the big board, I wonder if you might, I don't know if your camera will autofocus very well. I wonder if you might hold that up a little closer to the camera. All those FETs, the black case ones, the plastic, that's in the original design. That's where the TO3 cases, the metal cases were, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
And the board is the same size, but it was, it had metal FETs instead of plastic FETs. I can go get one if you want to see it.
That's okay. What are the black round things between the pairs? Are these toroids or what is that?
Yeah, those are little tiny drive transformers. Let me put it
Okay.
And that's the one thing that we have not figured out how to source yet. So far, we've been able to rob dead old boards of each of these. But at some point, I'm going to have to reach out to the good folks at Gates Air, if they'll be so gracious, and give me, find out where they build their raw materials for this. It's nothing magic. It's just a little tiny toroidal core with three windings.
And then why are the capacitors there almost all or all those orange dipped capacitors? What benefit do they have that works in this kind of circuit?
They have a good mix of low ESR at RF frequencies. And also, they carry a fair amount of current. That's the key, that they carry the dipped mylar is the style. And they're not quite as good at low ESR and RF as a ceramic, but a ceramic doesn't have a whole lot of current capacity. We call it current. The capacitor industry calls it dV over dt, the differential of voltage with respect to time. And I've just revealed to you everything I remember from my calculus class. But size matters. And, you know, even though the orange cap may be the same value as the little ceramic cap next to it, the ceramic cap has very, very low ESR, but it'll go home if you try to run much current through it, whereas the big mylar cap does not. It'll carry quite a bit more. So just for comparison, here is one of Harris's boards with the old metal case FETs. And you can see that ours doesn't look much different other than it has plastic case FETs instead of metal case.
Wow. Yeah, I remember those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we've seen a whole lot of those. So we'll move on in a minute. But one more thing while we're talking about SX transmitters is that our latest is actually a design that I've done from the ground up. This is a PDM amp from the Gates and the SX series. It's the same amp.
Right.
This is my design. The original had one fuse on the unreg, the low voltage supply. So if it died, both sides died. Well, ours has two fuses, one for each side. Okay. So one goes out, the other side does not. It uses a modern FET driver, whereas the old one used discrete transistors, and it was much more complicated. And it's a little harder to see, but it uses the plastic case FETs again. And this was one that Harris never came up with a plastic case version of it. All of theirs, to this day, every PDM amp made by Harris or Gates Air has the now unobtainium IRF 350s in it. Well, we fixed that. This is a modern, buy it all day long. As long as they make FETs, these will be available. A plastic case FET for this, and the damper diode as well. So that was the goal here, is we wanted to be able to make products with devices that you could continue to support. That was,
you know, if you don't mind me jumping in here, I think that, you know, one of the messages that's getting missed here is what a great service Mike has done for the community with these transmitters, because they're still really reliable rigs when you have the parts for them. You know, the problem was getting these parts and maintaining these parts, because as Mike said, all of these things that he's been working with, you can't get anymore. You know, you might be able to find a one-off here and there or whatever, but, you know, you just can't find these things anymore. And it's a shame, because something like, you know, that oscillator board or the PDM board or something goes, and you've got a perfectly good transmitter that becomes a doorstop because there's nothing to replace it with. You know, what Mike has done is he's, you know, kind of taken this transmitter under his wing, this series, and created all the replacement parts that you need to keep them running along. And, you know, in some cases better, you know, for example, that board that he's got with the new FETs on it, that's fantastic. I mean, you know, talk about way easier than, you know, the way that you used to have to change those FETs out. You know, same thing with the oscillator board, you know, those, and even the oscillator. You know, just a great way to add, you know, you could almost completely rehab an entire transmitter with the boards that Mike makes and have a brand new transmitter. It's amazing.
Yeah, Chris, thank you for saying that.
We even thought about replacing the microcomputer with an Arduino. We haven't done that yet. We don't have that many problems with the old one, but that's entirely possible.
Jeez. Chris, thank you for saying that way you did, and then thanking Mike for his work in this. You said it better than I tried to at the beginning, and you really hit the nail on the head, so thank you very much. We're talking to Chris Tarr, and Mike Patton is our guest. He's got more to show us, but we've got a little bit of money to make here. We're going to show you a couple things. And Mike, of course, Mike Patton and Associates in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, will have his contact information in the show notes. And he might even tell us before the end of the show. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store. And you can buy all kinds of things that you need for your broadcast facility, from the transmitter site to the RF line to antennas, and into the studio, even lighting if you're doing some video in the studio. One thing that every studio needs, I need to hook up one up here at my office because, you know, sometimes it's a little busy out in the hallway here. And that is a Henry Super Light. Now, I'm sure you've used the Henry Super Relay. The Henry Super Relay is the industry standard for years and years and years, an easy and safe way to connect your audio console's, you know, closure, whether it's a relay or a collector to ground closure, to turn on the tally light to say, hey, I'm on the air. I'm working in here. Well, what did the Three Stooges say? I'm broadcasting here. Well, nowadays, the Henry Super Relay is a little overkill. Now we've got so many LED lights in our studios, on the microphones and outside the door, that the Henry Super Light is what you need to do it safely, quickly, easily, no muss, no fuss. It's an LED tally light controller. It's got relay outputs on it too, normally open and normally closed, that you can connect up. Hey, maybe you're using one of those consoles that doesn't mute the speakers when you open the microphone. Maybe it's one of those consoles that doesn't have that logic. Well, you can do that with the Henry Super Light. You can mute those speakers. You could also mute the telephone if you needed to. Other things you could do with the relay outputs. But more importantly, it's got a place to hook up your LED light, your on-air light. And it'll sync about half an amp. It'll supply half an amp and sync that. But if you need more current than that, you can use an external 12-volt power supply and sync up to 2 amps with the Henry Super Light. You can control it a couple of different ways, with a momentary or a sustained closure. And what's also cool, you see the two RJ45 jacks on it. That's not Ethernet. It's not even Studio Hub, but it's an easy-to-implement wiring scheme. There you go. In the lower right-hand corner of the brochure, you can see you can daisy-chain several super lights together. So let's say that you're getting your contact closures off of, an Axia GPIO node or some other brand of, you know, audio over IP's a GPIO interface. Well, you could easily daisy-chain these together to make your wiring easier and control separately up to 4 different studio light controllers with the Henry Super Light. It's an LED tally light controller. It's simple. It's inexpensive. Hey, it even comes with the documentation here. Suncast is going to put me back on camera here. There's the schematic diagram that comes with every one of them right there. It's just as easy as can be. The 12-volt DC wall transformer comes with it, and even a description of the circuit. I love it when, you know, manufacturers tell you how the thing works. The Henry Super Light, it's simple, it's effective, but don't even try. You can't build one as inexpensively as you can buy one, and they're convenient, already put together and ready to go for you. The Henry Super Light is from Broadcasters General Store. Of course, they got the whole Henry Engineering line of things that'll really help you out to build your studios. I use them all the time when I'm building studios. Love them. And I need to get some of those UPS things that automatically switch your equipment from UPS power to shore power, or let you remove shore power. If you got to change the UPS batteries or something like that, you can force it one way or the other. Give them a call at 352-622-7700. For Broadcasters General Store. I just bought some supplies to fix up some sportscasters headphones. I needed new earpieces on them and new windscreens on the microphone. And BGS had them to me in about 3 days at a price that was honestly, it's half of what I expected. They got sharp pencils at Broadcasters General Store. So give them a call or visit their website at bgs.cc. Thanks a lot, Broadcasters General Store, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr, my co-host, is here, and Mike Patton is our guest. Mike, sorry to interrupt. I think you're going to get on to your next solution for transmitters.
I was, but I first want to say a good word for Henry Engineering. I've known Hank Landsberg for many, many years, and his products really are absolutely top-notch. My hat is off to him. He builds a good product.
And they're indispensable, too. You kind of love them when you got them. Miss him when you don't.
Yes. Yeah. And he was sort of my inspiration for, you know, if he can make a widget, I can make a widget. But he does great stuff and a very large product line. Great guy.
All right, Mike, what's next?
All right. We don't do just AM. We don't do just Harris. We've looked at a number of other things that we've done here or there to try to either make something more modern or save a buck. Here's an example. In the old days, what they called computer-grade capacitors or CAN-type capacitors were fairly ubiquitous. But these days, they're still around, but they're not as many of them as they used to be. They're very expensive for the amount of capacitance you get. And the whole world is in the process of moving away from SAE threads, what we think of as English threads, toward metric, and that sometimes is a problem, which we've run into with the SX transmitters, and we're still coming up with good ways to address that, converting to some of the metric hardware, and that's very, you know, some custom hardware that Harris supplied with those transmitters. And we managed to come up with replacement sources, but it's been a bit of a struggle. It's certainly more than somebody could do easily in the field. But one of the things we did was we figured out ways to retrofit what are called snap-in capacitors, which are fairly cheap and readily available these days, to replace the old CAN types. So we just laid out a very simple PC board. I don't actually have one in front of me, but it took two or three big snap-in capacitors, and it literally bolted in the holes that the old CAN type capacitors fit into on some of Nautel's boxes. And that worked out very well. That was almost a throwaway. You know, let's lay out a PC board in an hour, send it off, comes back in a week, and voila, we're replacing $100 capacitors with $20 capacitors. So that worked all day long. But another thing that, we sort of consider ourselves in the widget business. We've looked at ways to try to come up with creative ways to keep this legacy gear working, not just AM. Here's our latest product in that line. It's not much. Again, it's not much bigger than a business card, but it's a DB25 male on one end and two DB25 females in the middle. And we developed this in conjunction with a local station and then ended up marketing it to BE, and they refer people back to us for this now. That the old A and B series, on the original as well, FM transmitters used an IPA that used RF devices that are also seriously unobtainium these days. It's a 28-volt bipolar transistor, which was very early technology for RF transistors, and they have mercifully gone by the wayside. But BE's been selling their Alenos brand, because Alenos now owns BE, exciter, like 500-watt exciters, as drop-in replacements for the old FX30, FX50, and the IPAs all in one fell swoop, which is a good thing. But the problem is, you can't just plug that exciter into the transmitter and have it mute and have it run the automatic power control, because the interfaces are not the same. So people were finding out that they'd wire the exciter up and it would run all the time, which is not necessarily a good thing. And the big thing was, the automatic power control would not work, because the APC in that transmitter will not enable unless it sees sufficient drive to the final, which it determines not by monitoring the grid current, which is what you'd have thought it would have done, but by actually taking a sample of the forward power out of the IPA. Well, since the old IPA is not there anymore, no forward power sample, no APC enable, and so no automatic power control anymore. So we said, we can fix this. So I literally breadboarded the first one, and then I laid out a PC board and sent it off, and it came back, and we've gone through a couple of iterations on it. But this plugs into the back of an Alenos exciter, and you wire two wires over to the mute van terminals, and you plug the old DB25s from the BE IPAs into here, and you have to change the resistor value in the APC. That was unavoidable, unfortunately. But voila, the APC works. The front panel metering for the the old IPA now reads correctly off the exciter, and it mutes with the transmitter. And it's a literally a plug-in box. Plug it into the exciter, plug the old IPA cables in it, and you're good to go. And we offered it to BE. We said, here, we did this if you want to use it. And they said, no, we don't want to fool with it. That's too small for us. We will send people to you. And so we've sold about half a dozen of them, and we're very pleased. It's a great product.
And I'm sorry, would you repeat what BE model or models transmitter that's appropriate for?
This will work for any of their original 30 kilowatt transmitters, or their A series transmitter at any power level, or their B series transmitter at any power level.
Okay. And this is when you replace the IPA with an Elanos transmitter.
That's right. With an Elanos transmitter, which they've been recommending to people to do. And the old pull-out drawers were used on the A and B series transmitters. The original 30 kilowatt, the FM30, used a 1-driving-4 abomination for an IPA. And most of those went by the wayside a long time ago in favor of the pull-out drawers. So the 2 pull-out drawers for the higher power and the 1 pull-out drawer for the lower power units, those devices are unobtainium. So this replaces all of that. If you have a T-series, that's a different driver, and those drivers are usually still worth maintaining, although we could, you know, replace it with the T-series as well. But the T-series drivers use 50-volt FETs, so they're still in good shape.
Ah, wow. Chris, you got any comment on that? Take care of any of those BE transmitters?
Yeah, actually, that's good to know. We've actually run into this in a couple of cases where we're keeping older BEs alive, and we've either lost an IPA or an exciter or both. And we actually just recently had to have one have an IPA rebuilt. They couldn't do it, so we ended up, you know, with a roll your own thing, and that is the problem. You can't use APC or anything else, and it makes it difficult. So again, it's just great that there's people out here working on these solutions, because they're out there. I mean, these problems exist, and you know, I had no idea that Mike made a widget for it, but that is you know, that's very cool, because I've got a 30A, and I've got a, in fact, 30A is the one that is going to need the work, and then I've got a 5B or 10B with a similar situation where the IPA is dead, and, you know, I've just put in a Nikom or whatever, and, you know, let her go. So, yeah, I mean, it's the same thing as the solution with the SX5. It's just great that, or the SX series rather, you know, it's just great that as these manufacturers kind of orphan these things, and they can't blame them for that. I mean, they can't support these things forever, and, you know, it becomes, you know, more and more expensive and prohibitive for them to do it, as well as the knowledge that is lost in these businesses now. It's just great to see, you know, somebody continuing to support these, because again, the BE, just like with the SX series, BE transmitters, the A and B series, are diehards. I mean, those are workhorses, and there are a lot of them still out in the field, and there will be for a long time. So, you know, to be able to continue to get support on some of these things like that is wonderful. I am speaking from a guy who owns a couple.
Mike, there's a part that I wish you would build a replacement for. I don't know, it's about this big, and it's got some ceramic and some round things and some fins on it or something. If you could build like a FET replacement, and instead of 10,000 volts and 4 amps for the power supply, you might have to modify the power supply for like 40 volts and 1,000 amps. How would that be?
Just a drop-in FET that goes right
drop
into
it, a drop-in FET. Yeah. A drop-in FET.
Well, you know, I've often thought over the years, wouldn't it be nice if you could come up with some way to make a string of FETs or something that would just fit in place and all be in stacked in series or something like that to handle the voltage. It doesn't seem to work that way, but it's a fighting dream.
Wow. I think at that point, you know, Mike, when you and I were talking about doing this show and having you on, a topic that we talked about, and Chris Tarr has been involved with this topic also. Mike, you've been talking about how to extend the life of what is otherwise really good gear. It may have an Achilles heel or two, but otherwise, it's good gear. And that makes sense, as long as there's somebody like you to come up with solutions to get rid of that Achilles heel or patch it up or replace it with something new and keep that piece of gear going. Let's have a discussion for a few minutes on, okay, when is it actually time to replace this? When do we need to, you know, call up our favorite transmitter salesperson and say, hey, I think we got to talk about something new here.
Well, that's something that I was going to bring up on my own at this point, because I think it is important to know when to make the call of time of death on some of these boxes. We still support some orphan brands, Omnitronics transmitters and Energionics transmitters. But I have to tell you that I don't see myself ever buying another one and rebuilding it and selling it to somebody else. I think that those transmitters and their manufacturers being out of business, their time has come and gone. And that if you've got one and you can keep it running, great, but the first time it suffers a major casualty, it's time to call Nautel or whoever your favorite supplier of transmitters. In particular, tube-type AM transmitters, in my opinion, there is not ever a time to spend any kind of money repairing a tube type AM transmitter. People call us from MW5s every now and then or MW10s, and we say, you know, gee, that's a great transmitter. It served you for 40 or 50 years. It's time to put it out to pasture. Maybe some of the 317 Continentals, beautiful legacy transmitters, are worth maintaining, except their efficiency is so poor that the power bill will just kill you. Yeah. So there's no point in having anything other than in AUX service. And even those, as beautiful as they are, tube-type transmitters for AM are gone. They're just gone. And unfortunately, tube-type FM transmitters are going to be the next casualty, in my opinion. The quality of tubes has gone down. The price of tubes has gone up. And, you know, the knowledge of how to fixed tube transmitters, that institutional knowledge is being lost as the industry is graying out. You know, I'm 64 years old, and I'm probably younger than half the engineers I deal with on a regular basis. That's pretty scary. Mm.
Wow.
Now, most 30-year-olds wouldn't have any idea how to deal with high voltage at all. The few that are still, that are actually going into this business. And who can blame them? You know, it's a dying technology. It really is. When was the last time anybody sold a tube-type a TV transmitter? Or for that matter, can you even buy a tube-type FM transmitter anymore? You can't buy one from Continental. They're not making a new transmitter.
Mm. I don't know, but I don't think so. Chris, do you know that? Not domestic.
No, I can't think of anybody. And I don't know why you would. I mean, you'd be crazy to do it.
Right.
Nautel had that. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Now, Nautel had that campaign, you know, save the tubes from extinction, but that didn't seem to work out too well. Hey, Mike Patton is with us, and Mike, we're going to come back for your final thoughts or a tip, whatever you'd like to do, and make Chris as well. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. Don't get mad, get angry. And Chris Tarr's got something to talk about with Angry Audio. Chris?
Sure. Actually, I got a couple of things. First thing I want to talk about is the talk show gadget, which you can find. I'm looking at it right now on Angry Audio's website. Now, this is one that's great for home studios. You know, a lot of people, when they build a home studio, there's my dog, Louie, my coworker. When you build a home studio, a lot of people are using like Mackie mixers and some of those, you know, off the shelf kind of mixers. They don't have the same features as regular consoles do, radio consoles. They don't have on-off buttons for mics. They don't have tallies and mutes and those sorts of things. Well, this gadget fixes that. You can use this gadget to add up to 4 microphones. You can have an external monitor feed. There it is right there. You can have it mute and tally lights and all of these different things using an external, like a Mackie mixer. There's a schematic now on how that works. And basically, you can take a plain Jane Mackie mixer or plain Jane inexpensive something or other from Amazon and turn it into a full-fledged broadcast console. If you're doing podcasting or sports remotes, it's another good one for that, or even just regular broadcast remotes. don't have to take out that really expensive console just to get those features. You can bring out your utilitarian mixer and one of these boxes and a couple of microphones, and you're all set to go. So this is a great solution for those of you who'd like to do either, you know, sports or live broadcasts, maybe if you're podcasting or voice tracking from home and you want some of those features that you have in the studio. This is a great gadget for you. It's a talk show gadget from Angry Audio. The other thing I want to tease, it's coming soon, and I owe Mike a call, Catfish. We were going to talk this week, and I got busy. But he's been teasing. He showed me a little interface on the web that has, let's see, it's got audio in, audio out, and a USB cable. Wonder what that might be. We'll find out soon. So get check them out online, angryaudio.com. You know, when these things happen, when audio happens, don't get frustrated. Get angry with Angry Audio.
You tease? Oh, you tease. Well, we'll find out soon enough. Hey, our show, This Week in Radio Tech, angryaudio.com. That's the website. Check it out. Hey, our show is also brought to you by my friend Josh Bone. He should be your friend, too. He's a good guy with Max Connect Wireless. Here's Gary Morrill to tell you about what it does.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
He's got one version. I've got another. But, you know, the actual hardware for the 4G LTE modem doesn't really matter. What matters is the SIM cards that go inside. And one of mine has two SIM cards, Verizon and AT&T. You can also choose T-Mobile. And this one has one SIM card in it. But you can get your static IP address. That way you can get into things remotely, the static IP address. And prioritized data. I mean, hey, it's RF. It's probably going to get through, and it will get through before everybody else is in the football stadium. So whether you're doing a live broadcast remote in a challenging situation or a remote transmitter site where you can't otherwise get internet, these things work great. I used one of these just a month ago at WEVL FM in Memphis, Tennessee, to get them back on the air after a lightning strike knocked out Comcast in their area. So this got them back on the air and kept them on the air for several days while Comcast got their gear fixed. Thanks a lot. Max Connect Wireless. There's the website, and we'll have a link in the show notes. It is a good service for our industry. Okay, we've just got a few minutes left, and Mike Patton, I wonder if you've got a final thought for us that you want to let our listeners know about.
I want to try to keep these quality boxes running as long as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to think of ways to offer tech support to the people in the field who are actually having to work with these transmitters. Unfortunately, as I said, there are fewer people familiar with transmitters, and I think it's incumbent upon people in positions like the one I'm in to try to provide a hybrid service, if you will, between the manufacturer's tech support and just the standard contract guy who may or may not know much about your particular box. And so that's something that I'm trying to come up to speed on. And as I get older and traveling becomes less fun, it's a whole lot better for me, a whole lot more enjoyable for me to sit here on the phone and try to tell somebody, walk somebody through a problem, as opposed to getting on a plane and going to Alaska, which is what I did 2 weeks ago. And as much fun as it was, that was 11 hours in transit in 3 flight segments and an unexpected overnight in Seattle. And it's like, you know, I can sit here with my 3 monitor set up and my set of schematics, and the bathroom is 20 feet away and there's beer in the fridge. And if I can fix your transmitter that way, and you don't have to spend thousands of dollars to pay me to come to Alaska, this is a win-win. So, you know, that's something that I'm thinking about, is how to effectively and economically support these stations. I charge for tech support past a certain point. If you call me, you want a 10-minute conversation about something, that's fine. I'll help you out as a colleague. But if you want me to call three or four times and you want to spend an hour on the phone, you want me to dig out a manual and tell you to look at R15 on A7, we're going to talk about taking a credit card for that. And I don't think that's inappropriate at all.
No, it's good. Good. All right, Mike, how about you, Chris Tarr? Well, you got an idea, a tip for our listeners today.
You know, I've been way too busy for a tip. I will say I've had an interesting week. I had a transmitter go off the air up in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and it just boop off the air. And I do have cameras in there and I can see what's going on. And I tried to bring the transmitter up. I got a Vizwire overload, went up there and I got my, my bird scanner and looked up the line, and it looks like we're either going to have a burned out bullet or a bad antenna up there. So, just getting way. Fortunately, we have a backup antenna and, you know, transmitter's on at low power, but I've got a climber coming on Tuesday and I'll be back up there again for a day or two and we'll see what we can sort out. But, just another quick, you know, get the right tools, because, you know, without having the SiteMaster, the bird SiteMaster site analyzer, I never would have known what the problem was. I mean, you know, transmitters thrown off Vizwire, that could be anywhere. By, you know, being able to shoot up the line and see where the faults are and everything else, you know, saved me hours of troubleshooting. I knew within 10 minutes that, you know, we were going to have a problem. But that also comes along with, when you have those devices, make sure you have a kit with all the adapters and gender changers and everything that you're going to need, as well as cables, because nothing would be worse than getting all the way up there, pull out the site scanner, and realize I don't have an 1.5" to N adapter to cook it up. So that's my tip. And then also a special thanks to Mike. He's been a good friend to me for a long time and a really good mentor. And I really appreciate the work that Mike does, you know, especially with these transmitters. And he's right. You know, a lot of these things are orphans, and he kind of took them over under his wing. And I'll tell you, you know, that's a such a huge, huge benefit to us. That Mike is providing. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Very kind words indeed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, we're going to put your website up. I kind of surprised Suncast with this, but if he can pop it up, Michael Patton, standard spelling, michaelpatton.com is the place to find Michael. And if Suncast can get it up, great. And if he can't, well, then I'll make sure it's in the show. Either way, there you go.
There we are.
It's for Michael Patton and Associates. But the website is michaelpatton.com, and that'll get you there. You can contact Mike and talk to him about some of these things that will make your transmitter live longer.
We have
Michael, my hat's off. If I was wearing a hat, my hat's off to you, buddy. I really appreciate the work that you do. Hey, and you had help. You said Mr. Tuck. Is Jordan Tuck by your side there?
Jordan is in the office. Jordan, are you in the house? Slap your ass over here. Come here. Say hello to the folks. Jordan!
he's hiding now. We'll
have him back on the show someday. He's been a guest on our show. We'll link that in the show notes, too. Yeah.
He's a great guy. He's one of the few up-and-coming young people in this business, and he's going to go far. I'm very proud to have him associated with me for as long as he can stand it. There he is. Come here.
Hey, there's Jordan Tuck. Hey, woo.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Jordan.
Good to see you, man. They're just as good here. So,
and Mike, I got high hopes for you going places in this business, too. I think you got a bright future.
Well, I hope to hang around for a while. Thank you very much.
Chris Tarr, you too. I mean, you're one of the top guys. I'm glad you're here. And yeah, as young as you are, you'll be around a while.
Oh, yeah, Sonny. You tell me I'm just a spring chicken.
Gosh. All right. We got to go. Thanks to all our advertisers. Thanks to Mike Patton for making an hour plus available to us today. Thanks to Chris Tarr for being my co-host, asking good questions and adding to the conversation. Thanks to you for watching, listening, and providing us with your suggestions and telling your friends about This Week in Radio Tech. We really appreciate you. Be sure you support the advertisers. That's really helpful. And Suncast, thanks for switching the show, being there to produce the show. I really appreciate you. We got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech.